Exodus chapter 3. Here's our title again, Preparing and Calling God's Leaders, or Preparing and Calling Leaders. We actually started this last week, and last week you tried to get one point in. This sermon actually has 4 points, and so we got our first in last week, and I just want to remind you of what that was. Our first point last week was God does hear the cry of His people, and in that cry, He is forging leaders. And we looked at verses 23 through 25 in chapter 2. And so actually, this is a rather long section. We're not even getting to chapter 4, which is still part of this story of what is taking place in Egypt, or outside of Egypt first, with Moses, and then in Egypt with his people. But I wanted just to briefly read that passage to you again so that we can make that connection. So if your Bibles are open, you can read with me. Exodus 2, 23 through 25. This is from the English Standard Version. During those many days, the king of Egypt died, and the people of Israel groaned because of their slavery and cried out for help. Their cry for rescue from slavery came up to God. And God heard their groaning, and God remembered His covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. God saw the people of Israel, and God knew. And so we said there were several important aspects to this. We said, one, that the king, the Pharaoh of Egypt, had died. This was the Pharaoh under which sought Moses' death. Remember, Moses rebelled against Pharaoh. He rebelled against Egypt. In so doing, because he was seeking to free his people. He was seeking another path rather than what Pharaoh and Egypt had wanted. And so he rebelled against them by killing an Egyptian servant who was beating an Israelite. And we also said now that the king had died, Pharaoh had died, Moses was now free, or would be free, to return to Egypt. Although I don't think that was on Moses' mind. I think he had settled in to where he was with his new family and his new life. And we said from the very beginning that we were going to look for these Christ connectors, these Christ moments. We're going to look for Jesus in the book of Exodus, and there are quite many of them. And so last week we talked about some of those connectors as well. And then we also noted how God heard. God knew everything about His people. He heard their cries, He understood their cries, He understood their burdens, and He was preparing to meet those needs, or meet the needs of His people. He heard, He saw, He knew. He intimately was aware of their agony, and He was preparing their deliverance. Although in their deliverance, they might demonstrate some hard-headedness, we might say. Because we, all of us, I was trying to make the connection for us as well, that sometimes we get in a place that, even though it's not a good place to be, we become comfortable in it because it's something that we know. And sometimes we call that home. But God hadn't forgot His people. He remembered them, and He was preparing to move them, even if they were unwilling. That brings us to our second point this morning. Number two, most good leaders start at the bottom and intimately know their flock. When something significant happens in your life or to you, I know it does for me, we tend to remember those moments, don't we? We tend to remember the things that were surrounding the event. We tend to remember colors and smells and sounds and songs and different things. We tend to remember the little things when it's something big. We tend to remember where we were, what we were doing. We tend to remember how it changed our lives, how it shaped us. After we get away from that event a little bit, we start to look back and we begin to see how it truly affected us. We view the world in a much different way. We view God sometimes in a different way when something significant happens in our lives. I know one of the events that happened, and many of us, I'm sure all of us remember, was 9/11. Now, 9/11 did that for me. It was a significant event. I can tell you on that Tuesday morning what was going on. I had just dropped Tanner off at school, and I was on my way back through the Great Dismal Swamp. Truly, that's the name. And on my way back home, I was listening to the radio and I was hearing about all these things that were happening in New York. At the church where I was serving, we had a food pantry. And so on Tuesdays and Thursdays, people from all over the county would come to our church and they would receive assistance. And normally what I would do is I would go straight to the church and I would check in and see if there were any needs that day, and I would go about my business. That day was different because of all the things that were happening, and I was confused. I went straight back to our home. I went to the parsonage we were living in, and I turned the TV on, and almost to the moment, I sat down on the couch to listen to the news and see what was going on. Did that second plane hit the other building? And I thought, that's not an accident. That's not a coincidence. And so I was drawn in, and so that event changed me. My marriage was a significant event. The birth of our sons, my call to ministry. There are many. I can go down through the list and I can see now, looking back, how that these things changed me, how they shaped me, how they changed my view and perspective of the world and sometimes of God. Rightly or wrongly, it does that to us. And here, this call that Moses experiences changed him. And a call from God should change us. We should be willing to say, "Here am I, Lord." But that doesn't always happen right away. Look at this. Here's our first passage. Actually, it's just one verse. The very first verse in Exodus 3. Now Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian. And he led his flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. Again, this is Moses' call to serve God, his call to minister. And right away, one of the very first things that hits me when I read this verse is another Christ connector. And the Christ connector here is this. Like Jesus, Moses left a place of honor. Not the same type of place, but he left a place of great wealth. He left a place of honor and glory. He left Pharaoh's palace and that life behind as he goes into the wilderness. He goes into a most inhospitable place. He goes from greatness to lowliness. And not only that, the place that he leaves and the place that he goes to are vastly different. And the place that he goes to be or become a shepherd. Isn't that what Jesus did? John chapter 10, Jesus tells us he is the great shepherd. Jesus leaves his place of honor and glory. At the willingness of his own accord Not like Moses. Moses ran, but still, there's this Christ connector. There are some things that we can see in Moses as a type of Christ. Moses, here's as we continue that connector. Moses needed to be able to identify with his people. He needed that wilderness experience. He needed that time in the desert with those sheep, with those animals. He needed that time not to bring him to a state of humbleness necessarily, but to give him the experience that he would need and the appreciation of the different type of flock that he would lead later. The writer of Hebrews tells us that Jesus, when he came, he was able to identify with us and us with him. Because he took on human flesh. Hey guys, we've got a funny sound coming up from here. Thank you. And so here we have this call of Moses, and it's a unique call. As Shelley shared with the children, and you all have know this about the burning bush and how the bush was not consumed, and that the place where Moses met God, it was this holy place. Well, there's three significant things with this. First of all, is where it took place. It took place on the west side of the wilderness, or in the back side of the desert. And what it means is this, and unless it's specifically stated in the scriptures, anytime directions are given, it's always assumed or understood that the person is facing east. And so the backside tells us that it was the west side and where Moses was at. He was in the Sinai Peninsula. And this was a desert region, or and still is. But there's some neat things there. And the whole reason for him to go there is that, like many, they would be traveling. These were groups that would take their flocks wherever they could find food. And so sometimes they would travel 50 or 60 miles from the rest of their families, their tents, if you will. How's that now? Is it better?
No.
No. I'm sorry, folks. We're just going to do the best we can today. We've had some technical issues. But now we know where Moses is. Sort of know where he is. We know he's in this area anyway. And he goes to this area to find food for his flock. And again, another reason I think Moses needed to be here is because he's going to spend more time there. He's going to be leading a different flock through this area for many years to come. And so he needed to be familiar with it. And then lastly, I think is the most important thing here. Notice what it says. The mountain of God. The mountain of God, even to Horeb. Horeb means desert or desolate. Here's what I think is interesting about this. Two things. Many will connect this place with the Sinai journey and where Moses would later meet God to receive the Ten Commandments. They believe it's the same mountain or same mountain range anyway. But more so than that, I find it interesting that with Moses, with Jesus, and sometimes even with us, these major events that take place in our lives, these things that happen, whether good or bad, typically we view them in a negative way. It's kind of, we find ourselves in a desert place. We find ourselves in a wilderness experience ourselves. Again, not physically, but spiritually we do oftentimes. And I wonder, there must be a reason. There's something that God is doing in those times. Sometimes I wonder if it's that God needs to get us to a place of solitude for our own good. That God just wants to have us alone to Himself, not just for Him, but mainly for us, to get His child where His child needs to be. Or maybe it's simply that He uses those times which come upon us, whether it's because of something we've done or something somebody else has done. Maybe it's a sin, maybe it's not a sin. But He uses those things in our lives to draw us closer to Himself, so that we can really listen, so that we can really hear the message that He has for us. Because I don't know about you, but I know in my own life that there have been times where I wasn't very in tune with God. That things were going along well, and I wasn't always listening like I needed to be listening. And so something would happen in order to get my attention. I experienced a wilderness experience spiritually. God spent some time with Moses. Then I thought about Jesus. When Jesus was first being identified, we remember when He comes and John the Baptist says, and here comes the Messiah. And He's baptized, and as He comes up out of the water, you can hear the voice of God, or people heard the voice of God, and something significant happened where they saw the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, descending upon Jesus. And we see the Trinity in action there. And then what does Jesus do? He doesn't go spend time among the people. He goes out into the desert and He's tempted. He spends significant time out there depending upon God. That's what we need to do sometimes. Here's our next point. Point number three. God calls leaders. And this call is a holy call from the self-existing one. He who good leaders rely upon. We often have this picture in our mind's eye of how certain people, certain leaders are to look, how they are to act, how they are to sound. And so when it comes to leaders, many of us are very much like the people of Israel. Remember, we're skipping ahead a little bit, but remember there came a time when Israel wanted a king. They had a king, they just didn't recognize him as king. But yet they wanted a king like all the other people groups, all the other people around them. They wanted a king that would come and lead them. And so they got what they wanted. They got Saul. And remember what the scriptures say about Saul, that he was head and shoulders above the rest. He was tall. He was handsome. He looked like a king, but he didn't have the heart of a king. But yet he looked the part, and it was thrust upon him. And that's what we look for sometimes. We look for the Sauls. We look for the one who is tall and attractive. We look for someone who sounds good. We look for someone, or listen for someone, who can give a good sound bite, right? Who can come back with a quip, and they can cut others down, and And we just have this idea that that's what leaders are supposed to do. We look for those and listen for those who speak well, who are able to be articulate. Those who often sound intelligent, but maybe they're not so intelligent. We look for someone with that strong voice that can project. We often want someone who's charismatic, and again, who can stir the masses with that well-timed phrase. Something that captures the moment. But God doesn't always choose His leaders like that. He doesn't choose His leaders on the way they look or the way they sound. We need to keep this in mind as the body of Christ. If you're a follower of Christ, you too are to be a leader. You too are to be a leader in your community and in your church. In spite of your looks, in spite of your sound, in spite of a title or a position, we are to do all things unto the Lord for His glory. There is passage after passage in both the Old and New Testament that demonstrates what leaders or believers are supposed to be like and to do. From Colossians and Titus and Matthew, we get all these statements about how we as believers are to be imitators of Christ and to be imitators of those who came before us. Moses is going to have a crisis here. He's going to be in the wilderness and he's at the mountain of God. He's in this holy place. He sees this burning bush. And he's going to have a crisis because he's going to be asked to do something. Let's take that back. He's going to be commanded to do something that he's not real comfortable with. And there are some reasons for his uncomfortableness. Look at the passage here. Exodus 3, 13 through 15. Then Moses said to God, "If I come to the people of Israel and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' and they ask me, 'What is his name?' what shall I say to them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am." And he said, "Say this to the people of Israel, 'I am has sent me to you.'" God also said to Moses, "Say this to the people of Israel, 'The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and thus I am to be remembered throughout all generations." Again, Moses has this burning bush experience, and one might think, yep, if that were me, I'd get back on my Prozac and I would be the best Christian that I could be because I'm having some issue. Or another might think, you know, if I heard from God like Moses, I'd do anything he wanted me to do. And I would do it with such confidence, there'd be no stopping me. I think that's what most of us would like to think about ourselves if we had this kind of experience. But truth be told, I tend to think most of us would be like Moses and would be somewhat hesitant. And we'd have lots of questions. We're often brave. Do you realize this? We're often brave in the confines of our living rooms. As we're sitting on the couch and we're watching the news and seeing other things. And I would say this and I would do this. Right? I caught myself doing that the other day. Teresa and I were watching the news and I said something like that. And I was going, wow. I sound just like my sermon. This is what I would do. But truth be told, we would probably be a lot like Moses and hesitate. There are two problems that immediately come to light here. In your Bibles, look back at verse 11 for just a moment. Verse 11, Exodus 3:11. But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt?" I like what one writer calls this. He calls it Moses' problem of insignificance. His problem of insignificance. And there's such, it's really kind of a neat connection. Because notice what Moses says. Who am I? Right? Who am I? That's significant in the sense that of what God says just a few sentences later. He says, who am I? Who am I to be the one to go to Pharaoh? Who am I the one who can bring the children of Israel out? Why me? I just lead a bunch of sheep in the desert. Who am I? This isn't Moses being humble. This is Moses being afraid. This is Moses questioning his own character. And I've done this, and I still do it sometimes. We compare ourselves to others thinking that we don't measure up. And therefore, because we don't measure up to others or through our comparison of them, we believe that we're unqualified to serve in accordance with our calling. Did you get that? We think that we are insignificant, that when we compare ourselves to others like us in the church or at work or something else, that somehow this call that I have upon my life, yes, I recognize the call, but I'm not good enough. I'm not able to do certain things. Not like this guy over here or this lady over here. They're so much better at it than I am, and they would be better to do what God is calling me to do anyway. And here's one of the major issues. It isn't about me or you and our abilities. Get that again. It's not about me, it's not about you, and it's not about our abilities. It's always about God and His ability to work in and through me and you as broken vessels. It's His ability. Here's the second problem, or so to speak. It's one of identification. You go back to verse 15. Actually, look at verse 13 again up on the screen. If I come to the people of Israel and say, first of all, I think that's really interesting. Where Moses says to God, get this, God is saying, Moses, this is what you're going to do. And Moses says, well, Lord, if I go to the people, right? Let me ask you something. In your understanding of God personally, in your relationship with Him, has there ever been a time where you could say to God, Lord, if I do this for you or in your name, has there ever been a time where God said, sure, you make that choice. You're my child. You do whatever you want to do. Has it ever worked that way for you? Now, I've tried it a few times, and normally I get smacked around by God a little bit. There's no if to it. Moses is going whether he realizes it or not. He's going to get there one way or another. So if I come to the people of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? What shall I say to them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. Again, I think that's interesting when you connect it back to verse 11 with Moses' first question, who am I? And the real question is, who is God? Not who am I, but who are you, Lord? Who are you? And God says, I am that I am. There is no other God greater than me. I am that I am. I can do what I want. And I will do what I want. And if I want to use your life, I'm going to use your life. If I want to use the events that you experience, I'm going to use those events. I am that I am. There is no other. I am God. And I think there's such significance in this name. Here's what Moses may have been thinking. See, all the Egyptian gods had names. They had a god for this and a god for that. And that's really kind of how some religions are today. There's a different god for every day of the week. There's a different god for something, some need here or some need there. But God says, I am that I am. There is no other God other than me. It literally means he's the self-existing one. I always love it when kids ask the most important question, and sometimes moms and dads go, trying to answer it. But you know, the question that most kids ask at some point? Okay, I know where you came from, Grandma and Grandpa, and I know where I came from, but where did God come from, right? See, I think that's a pretty significant question in the development of our children, and that we're able to answer that. I am that I am has always existed. He didn't come from anywhere. He has always been and always will be. If he wasn't, he wouldn't be the self-existing one. He wouldn't be the I am that I am. See, I think we need to be able to not only share that with our children, but I think we need to be able to grasp it ourselves, is that there is someone greater than ourselves. And so what does this mean for you as an individual? Well, it means that you and God need to have a conversation if you haven't had one in a while. What does it mean for us as a church? It means that we are to examine and to continue to re-examine our call and the things in our life that we're doing in our church, in our ministries. It means that we need to re-examine our ministry and missions here in Park Circle. We need to look at this as, in one sense, our Jerusalem. Yes, there's Samaria and the greater world that lies outside of this area, but this is our Jerusalem. This is our first mission field. For Moses, as he meets with God there in the Sinai Peninsula, as he meets with him at the mountain of God, I'm sure Moses not only is hesitant because of fear, and because he is doubting his character, because remember what he came from, what he was running from. But I feel sure that there's a hesitation because and fear because of now where he's going back to and what he's being asked to do. There's a major difference in leading a bunch of little sheep around in the desert trying to find some grass and water for them and leading a people to the promised land. Major difference. Here's our last point. Good leaders speak only what is given by God, for God, and not for self-gain or glory. I come back to our calling. That if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, then you are a leader, like it or not. I believe God has called us and is calling all members of His body, of the church, to lead in some capacity, meaning that we are to demonstrate leadership qualities in our church and in our communities and in our homes. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to take up some teaching or public speaking role. It just means that you are to lead others to Christ where you are through your words and your deeds. You are to let others see and hear Christ and you, and you are to do so for His glory. Notice this last passage, verses 16 through 18. Go back. Exodus 3, 16 through 18. Go and gather the elders of Israel together and say to them, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, of Isaac, of Jacob, has appeared to me saying, I have observed you, I have watched you, and what has been done to you in Egypt. And I promise that I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt to the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, a land flowing with milk and honey. And they will listen to your voice, and you and the elders of Israel shall go to the king of Egypt and say to him, the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. And now please let us go. He says, let us go 3 days' journey into the wilderness in order to sacrifice to the Lord. One, God is simply saying, just do what I tell you to do. I'm telling you to go, and you're going to go one way or another. You can go willingly, or you can experience some hardship, and then you're going to go. But just go. Just go and do what I say. No more, no less, and I'll take care of everything else. I'll take care of the rest. That's what God is essentially saying to Moses. Back in the 90s when the bombing in Oklahoma City took place. Most of you remember that? And in that bombing, there were lots of questions, and people were afraid, and rightly so. This was the time that I was pastoring a small church. I was bivocational at the time. I was in seminary, and I was working in the school system. Teresa was teaching in the same school system, but at a different school. And my job was working with kids who had behavioral issues. And so I would make these behavioral plans, and I would help teachers and the people I was working with put them in place. And I was working specifically with one child at this point. And I remember the principal of the school coming to me and asking me to say a few words because we were going to have this gathering. And all the kids and community leaders, and there was a company that supported the school. They were going to plant a tree at the school, and they were going to remember the children that died in that bombing in that daycare center. And I thought, wow, this is really neat. The principal is asking me to say a few words at this memorial and this event. And so I actually spoke for about 20 minutes. Believe it or not, I can keep it under 40 minutes. But I spoke for about 20 minutes, and I used a passage from 2 Timothy. And when I got done, I thought everything was cool. The kids went back to class, and the teachers went back to class, and the principal pulled me aside. He said, Rod, that was really good. I appreciate you doing that. And now we're going to do this again. We're all going to gather at this local company that supports us, And I want you to speak there too. I just don't want you to speak about the religious stuff. And I thought, wow, that's really nice of you, but did you listen to what I just said? Because everything I had to say came from the scriptures. I have nothing else to say. And he said, I know you can do it. And so I struggled with this. I was fretting for a whole week because I had a week to prepare my remarks. And so we get there and they're planting another tree, and the president and vice presidents and all these leaders were coming out from this company, and all the kids were there. And I said the exact same thing that I did the week before. Because I had nothing. You don't have to clap. I'm too dumb to say anything else. And so I could see the principal. He was a nice guy, but I could tell he was bothered. And he was, I wouldn't say that he was seething, but he was upset with me. And so when I was done and everyone was leaving, he started to approach me, and so did the president of the company. And as the president of the company got there, so did the principal, and he held out his hand and he shook my hand and he said, thank you so much. That's exactly what we needed to hear. We needed to hear from the Word of God. And the principal looked at me, and when the president walked away, he said, good job, Rod. And that was it. God took care of it. Here's my whole point in that story. Just do and say what you're supposed to do and say. Nothing more, nothing less. And God will take care of everything else.